This is the Money Talks podcast with Michael Campbell.
Very pleased to welcome back to the show right now, Peter Grandage. You can find him at petergrandage.com. Peter, I was looking forward to chatting with you, and I'm thinking we're still trying to find Peter on the line here right now. We'll try and get a hold of him. But still, I can give you this bit of a background. We had Peter on, gosh, it's going back in 2018, and he was talking about being bullish on gold. It was under 1,200. Obviously, I'm going to have to ask him about that. But the other thing is that his methodology has been very attuned to the markets and the ups and downs of that. So you can see why I'm looking forward to him. And this is one of those times when you have a broadcast and a podcast that things get off the rails a little bit. But he's back on with us, Peter Grandage. Peter, thanks for taking the time.
Good to be with you, Michael.
I was just saying, you know, I'm going back to 2018. You went bullish on gold around this time, I think. It was a little earlier than this, but under 1,200 bucks. That looks awfully good. But I also want to come to the markets because, you were very cautious in the markets. But then on March 12th, I read your blog, on March 12th, you said, you know what? I think the bear is getting out. We're finished with the bear. And now you're back on nervous about it. So let's just talk a little bit about that at this point. And I'll start with stocks. I'll move back to gold in a minute. But you must feel pretty good about the kind of ways your methodology is sort of attuned to the market at this point.
Yeah. First of all, Mike, I can't thank you enough. You know, you're my connection back to my home away from home, Canada. I don't work in the metals and mining business for over 7 years now, but the one person I always brings me back and gets me heart pumping again is speaking with you. So I really do
take this
as an honor to be talking with you. So I don't manage money anymore, so all my opinions come from a private investor. I don't have anybody I'm representing or any alternative motive other than to speak for my own well-being and my own greed. And I would just tell you that as I shared to a group I'm a head of a planning group that does planning just for U.S. citizens, I thought in March we just got way overdone on the downside and there would be a tremendous bear market rally. It would not be, or as what I've said, I don't suspect we will have another major bull market in my lifetime. I'm 64 now, so I think for the next several years, we're not going to see anything go up 50 or 100% again in, related to equities. But the market became so overdone, we knew that the reallocation would give a bottom. Then, of course, the Federal Reserve committed what I believe will be the end of what we knew as American capitalism and did the ultimate moral hazard by bailing out bad choices and flooded the market with trillions of dollars, and now are buying for the first time ever corporate bonds and EFTs. And we're actually seeing banks buying $2.4 billion in financial assets per hour for the last 2 months. And so, there's an old saying, don't fight the Fed, but in this particular case, for this rather short period of time, it would have been foolish to stay bearish. And that was really what generated me to feel that there could be a run back up. And the number I used, and it was just a number, it didn't have any real specific meaning other than that the rally could get the S&P back to 3,000. But on that way up, depending on people's circumstances and risk tolerance and all that other stuff, you certainly would want to be out by then. So as you said, in the last couple of days, all of whatever, if you want to call that bullishness, was gone, and I'm actually personally looking to short the U.S. stock market again.
I'm talking with Peter Grandage. You can find him at petergrandage.com. Yeah, that's a wonderful description of what the market movement, but also the approach there when you're looking at that. And you've sort of alluded to this, the question. You've already, semi-answered it, but I'd like you to elaborate. I mean, once the market started to recover, bounce back, the big question becomes, have we seen the bottom? I mean, is this the beginning of something new and big? Or is this just a normal short covering, rebound, whatever it is, kind of rally? So can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I think that's still the big question hanging over the markets.
Sure. Well, first of all, what's really concerning me about the so-called rally is it's being led, oddly enough, by retail investors. And I've been at this, I know as long as you have, I've been at this 36 years, and I don't remember any time where retail investors, other than short periods, did very well when they were on one side and the professionals were on another. So that's the first concern I would have at people. I think the other thing is we're all talking talking about a recovery, at least, again, I'm only speaking to U.S. markets. Sure, there's going to be recovery, but from what level and how much? And not only do I think that question is still not answered, I think anybody that thinks it's going to somehow return close to anything that it was like for any conceivable time is going to be badly wrong. And that's why I think if you go back to what I know when you and I first started, the stock market was a place where you went and bought to be part ownerships of businesses. And businesses mostly rely on the long term on how an economy is doing. And while it's true the Fed, you know, can do what it's did and caused a fantasy come true, I know we'll talk about gold in a moment, but the Fed can't print EBITDA, it can't print jobs, it can't create the antiviral and vaccines and all that. And we must remember, as much as everybody keeps talking about a vaccine, they've yet to create any vaccines on any of these type of viruses. And the confidence of people to go back, what they may be going back to. The Becker Friedman Institute, a very independent group out of Chicago, has stated that there are 3 out of 10 people that lay off, their jobs are permanently lost, and another 25% that do go back are going to see significant pay cuts. So I just don't understand, you know, past, you know, understanding that the Fed gave a floor for people to feel a comfort level and to run in and buy stocks. I don't see, if you have a long-term view, multiple of years, how you can expect this to not only be sustained but grow, given the enormous economic and political and social damage that continues to happen here in the U.S.
Well, as I say, I've been talking the same thing in Canada that I just alluded to earlier with Rob Levy, that, you know, we talk about this V recovery. I said, it's not that you're not going to get a recovery. How can you not get a recovery when no one's been in a restaurant and all of a sudden 10 tables get booked? That, as a stat, will be recorded as a big up move. But it's how far that up move goes in the economy. And I think you've outlined some of the real dangers there. And one is unemployment, obviously, how much is permanent, and similar numbers coming out in Canada, you know, 25% of restaurants aren't going to open again, and then we'll see if 25% more can stay afloat, you know, in Canada with restrictions to 50% occupancy at best. Those kind of things are going to take quite a while to sort of filter through into the market. And but again, to me, you've come to something that we've been talking about on the show, which is it's really a bet on how far the Federal Reserve can carry this market. That's, you know, if you're one side of the equation says, yes, they're saying unlimited funds, it can't miss. On the other side saying, no, I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. And that would be one of more caution. And I think that's pretty much what the deal is right now.
Well, I think the issue is, first of all, I think it's important, and one of the misnomers in the media reporting down here, one of the only reasons why I would still speak to you and not 99% others, because you're an honest and faithful and straightforward financial journalist, why down here they're mostly tied to the hip of Wall Street. So a number that really is confusing the people, they have to understand that this bailout wasn't for the general public. The general public got what the powers that be thought. They gave them $1,200. The top 10% own 84% of all stocks and over 90% of all business equity and over 80% of all non-home real estate. The Federal Reserve stepped in for the top 10%. It's them that are going to be important to hold up and continue doing what they do in order for it to filter down to the people of regular mid-sized earners. 74% of the U.S. public was working paycheck to paycheck. Even on that factor, people earning between $100,000 and $150,000, 30% of them only made it paycheck to paycheck. So that was before all of this occurred. There's just no way that they could be any way, shape, or form back in the same condition once, even if we return to the way things were tomorrow. So the real key, besides the Fed, is what is the top 10% going to do? And what's interesting, they're net sellers of the stock market. They're liquidating holdings to retail. So I think that's an important thing. But the Federal Reserve, and maybe this will segue into a question about gold, but the Federal Reserve created a fantasy I used to dream of in the 25 years when we were in the gold market. And that is, Fed Chairman Powell said that he doesn't care about debts and deficits at this time, and he doesn't seem being concerned about it in the future. He said this on a 60 Minutes. And then he said a word that I remember old gold bugs had to raise from their graves and stand up, and said that as far as he's concerned with digital money, they can just keep printing money endlessly. Well, you know, that may be true, but there's a, it's a terrible price to pay for it. We were already in a huge debt and deficit problem here in the U.S., not just on the federal, but state and local, as well as pension and private and public debt. And but now the fact that we've added trillions of dollars onto this, and the states and local cities are going to be desperate, Mike. They basically shut down. They've lost all sorts of tax revenue and business revenues, and they're not going to be able to get it from the business side because the businesses are going to be tough to open. They're going to have to raise taxes, and they're seeking bailout. So, yeah, you're right. Maybe there's one more kick in the can, Mike. Maybe the Federal Reserve can do one more, but we're really at the end of that, and that's one of the most bullish factors I think those that are still looking at gold as an investment have going for them.
I'm talking with Peter Granjic, and he just summed up why you should be listening to Money Talks. I mean, his point about who owns stock, who's benefiting from that move in stocks is such a key one, who that policy is really in place for compared to the general public. There's lots around that, and he elaborated to that, but I've got to take a break. I'm coming back. I promise I'll go specifically to gold. We won't have a lot of time, so I got to go right to gold with Peter. He turned bullish, by the way. It was under $1,200. It was about April he was talking to me in 2018. Obviously, he's happy with that. I want to see where he thinks it's going next. Peter Grand at petergrandage.com. Peter, as I alluded to, you're bullish on gold under $1,200. We've seen this major move. Give me the nutshell. Are you still bullish, or you've got parameters for it, or are you full speed ahead?
Sure, Mike. Well, early in March when I switched into the stock market, I kind of upset some old friends because I said that I was selling all my mining shares but one and some physical bullion in order to not only participate in the market rally, but also to hope to catch an oil move down and buy it, which I missed. But after the 60 Minutes interview of Jay Powell, I let it be known to my followers that this was just an open door to, you know, to be roaring bullish on gold again. And I just think it's breaking out. 1800 is really in the cards nearer term. And like I said, originally when I turned bullish, I felt that it would be a new nominal high before the end of 2021. It'll probably come sooner than later. But I have to tell you, Mike, the real market that I'm absolutely in love with, it's a much thinner and smaller market, but I think it's a no-brainer market because it's going to do well even if there is no recovery in the economy, and that's the uranium market. I have it's my largest holdings ever. I've had exposure to anything, and there, I think, especially the producers like Cameco, are just really in the first inning, and people are just arriving at the stadium. They haven't even reached their seats yet, and it's a bull market that I think is going to rival past one. So I think if someone's looking to play something new and hasn't yet, they should speak to their advisors about the potential of things related to uranium.
Interesting, because that's certainly flying under the radar. I knew that you, you know, had been recommending it and talking about it, but very, very few. This is one that I'm not seeing out and about in the financial press in any way.
Well, you don't expect to in the first or second.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They normally come halfway through the game, and that's when they start to show up.
Yeah, that's why it's so interesting at this point. And I'm glad you're bringing it to our attention. And again, just to reiterate, so in your way of investing in that market, you are investing in sort of the brand name companies of the uranium side?
Sure. The Cameco, there's a couple of ETFs. There's not many, but the ETF is probably the safest way for the average person to go in. But I believe the producers will certainly benefit the most in the initial stage. And that's why, you know, I consider Cameco the world leader. And I just think it's a stock that's destined to move substantially higher over time.
And just a reminder, people can go to petergrandage.com, and Peter has his blog and he does recordings, etc. And so, for example, if he has a change in opinion on gold or wants you to do more of it, you can just get it right there and it's free. Great stuff from the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Whiz Kid, which is a wonderful book, but also on uranium. So I'm glad you brought that to our attention on that one, Peter. Let's finish with just one quick thing. We have a minute left, and I always like to ask you this, and people with your level of experience, you look forward. What's the biggest mistake you're worried about, people? If you say, whatever you do, be careful about this, or don't do this.
Well, the ultimate crime in investing is not being wrong. It's staying wrong, and I've done that mistake.
Oh.
And I find a lot of people are very much overextended still and have risk of principal. And it's not the financial risk that'll destroy them. It's the mental anguish that'll come from staying wrong and ended up doing something that hurts you. And people need to learn to measure mental anguish. And it's very hard for financial advisors who don't know you real well to appreciate your level of mental anguish. And so I think you need to focus on the mental aspect of whatever may happen to what you do as well as the financial.
I'm sitting here. Is my picture in that book under holding too long? I always ask myself, Peter, how long did it take me to learn really straightforward lessons? And that's a wonderful way to finish this interview. And once again, you know how much I enjoy getting a chance to chat and appreciate you finding time for us. So all my best to you and your family.
And I hope you come out to a Giant game. They're going to be good this year.
We're going, baby. I sure will. Peter Grandich.
Subscribe to the Money Talks with Michael Campbell podcast for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. For the complete show, daily podcasts, and more.